Hello and welcome to another podcast edition of Taiwan Talk. I'm Keith Manconi. Among Taiwan's outlying islands, Orchid Island stands out as perhaps the most isolated. Until the late 1960s, it was off limits to the public, meaning that its local inhabitants, the indigenous Tao people, had relatively little contact with outsiders. Today's guest spent a year on Orchid Island back in 1971, just a few years after it opened up, and at the time, that traditional culture and way of life was still very much intact. Father Barry Martinson made the trip as a young seminarian on his way to priesthood in the Catholic Church, and during that year, he integrated himself in the local culture, making friends, learning the language, and bearing firsthand witness to a tribal society in transition. He wrote about his experience in his best-selling book, Song of Orchid Island, now being re-released as an e-book by Taiwan-based publisher Camphor Press. I spoke with him recently. Father Barry Martinson, thank you for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
So I just want to start with way back in the early 1970s. You are a seminarian getting ready to be a Jesuit priest, and you're part of that training is you're supposed to do some service work, and you choose to do it in Orchid Island. You were already in Taiwan at the time studying, but you decided that you wanted to go to Orchid Island for this actual service work. So tell us a little bit about what was behind that decision. What was the draw for Orchid Island?
Well, I think I wanted to do something, first of all, very adventurous. I was only 25, and I wanted to do something meaningful, and I wanted to work with the poor and be with the poor and be poor myself in serving them. So I looked around Taiwan, and I found that that was the poorest area, was Orchid Island. And it was also very culturally rich at the time. So I thought it'd be a great experience to go there for a year.
And when you get there, I mean, the culture of the Tao people at that time was still very much intact. They were still very much living the same kind of lifestyle that they had been for hundreds of years. So can you tell us a little bit about the Orchid Island that you found when you arrived?
Yeah, well, it was many people call it primitive, you know, but I found it just a beautiful, natural environment. Most of the houses still were traditional. They were stilt houses or houses part buried in the ground or little workshop houses. And there were some recent cement buildings also. But there was a very traditional lifestyle based on fishing and farming and a lot of cultural celebrations and their own, you know, traditional outfits. And that was very attractive to me. It was colorful, you know. It was being an artist, I noticed the blue of the sky and the ocean and the colors of the rocks and the green grass and the skin of the people and their red betel nut lips, you know. It was just very, very colorful and kind of a, I wouldn't say paradise because it was like hard to find a sandy beach and there weren't, you know, luxury hotels or anything, just a few hovels at the time. But it was a beautiful, beautiful place and a wonderful culture.
Right. So definitely the culture and the scenery were something of a draw for you. But you say in the book that this is not an anthropological account. I mean, you're not writing about this because you want to give a detailed account of how these people are living and what their culture is like. Instead, you say that you're more interested in sharing the lives and sharing your experience of, you know, being with the people and sharing their lives with them. Tell us a little bit about the motivation behind writing this book originally.
Well, I just finished 1 year with them, and my heart was just full of these experiences with all these people, and many were my close friends. So the motivation was just kind of get it out of my system to write this. I was studying theology that year, and I just really wanted to express what I'd gone through, both the happy times and the tough times. But it was the people that made that island so wonderful. They were extraordinary people, and they still are. They have a rough lifestyle. They have a lot of challenges. But they are able to cope, and you know, amid all these the weather, the oppressions, and everything. But I was just really amazed by them and their friendliness to me and their acceptance of me as their friend.
So you're saying this experience of being there, I mean, it was kind of an adventure more than anything else. And so that's kind of what you're writing about in this book is your adventures and your experiences on Orchid Island.
That's right. It's a series of short little stories. And each story has to do with a different person or a different place or a different adventure. And for instance, going out and going fishing with the people or going to the mountains to pick what we call dragon eyes fruit, and or going to the prison. It used to be a prison there to do tribal dances, and or meeting these strange people or interesting characters on the island. And also the way this affected me at the time. I think these were stories that other people found heartwarming, sometimes very funny, and also fascinating, something that maybe isn't in any other place in the world.
I mean, as you were writing this, though, did you have any mind for what in particular you wanted to share with an audience about this experience? Was there something that you wanted to communicate to readers?
Well, I think I wanted to share how important it is to become friends with people first before you decide to do anything for them. That was a running theme through the book, and I felt like if I really wanted to help these people, I had to understand them, to live with them, to be close to them, to be their friends, and then maybe they might tell me what I was needed for. And in the end, that's what happened. They were the ones that found me a job and found out what I could do. But it all came from them, and I think that's what I wanted to communicate. I don't really see the point in going and trying to change people and make them into something that like yourself. I wanted to try to show how important it is to accept people as they are and to see what we can do to help them in the ways they need, not ourselves.
But that is sort of something that you struggled with a little bit in the book. I mean, you talk about you worked with a number of Taiwanese teachers that were also living on the island, and some of them took the perspective that the Tao people, they were people that needed help and they needed guidance and they needed to be improved. And, you even questioned yourself, am I, too much in love with this culture? Am I letting them take advantage of me? Am I not holding them to any kind of standard? Am I just, seeing everything through rose-tinted glasses? So was that kind of a journey that was difficult for you to go through and kind of questioning some of these things?
I think it was. There was always this conflict wanting, how much should you accept? How much should you want to change? And I think for me, though, I it wasn't so much looking through rose-colored glasses. It was through the eyes of an artist. Seeing things that I really loved and I found beautiful and making friends. And I was just kind of caught up in the whole thing. And I think it was more the adventures I had, the stories I wanted to tell, than it was trying to have some kind of a crusade, to change, to better, even to evangelize. It wasn't that. It was just a sharing. It was just... really a sharing, and the more I stayed there, I think the deeper that feeling came that I wanted to, just really share their lives, and if they wanted me to help in any way, I would be happy to.
And so it sounds like you're almost saying that when we think of this word help, I mean, help perhaps should even come second to sharing in lives. Tell us a little bit about why you would almost subordinate helping or doing something proactively to help other people to maybe sharing first and understanding and being with.
Well, I think love comes first. And in order to love, you have to know people. And we always say, first you know, then you love, and then you serve. And if you don't really know them, it's hard to love them. And if you don't love them, it's hard to serve them. So some people come out with an idea to serve and they don't even have love. And I think that causes a lot of problems. You do things that the people don't like or you offend them. And there's so many examples of that. The fact that the government gave them stone or cement houses when they really didn't want them. They wanted to live their traditional lifestyle, trying to change them. I just felt like the first step was of knowledge, to know. And that's not an easy task. It takes time. And so if you can love and then to serve, to help, I think that's the progression.
And I don't want to give our listeners the wrong impression. This certainly isn't a message book. This isn't a book where you're arguing for this or that policy or anything like that. But you know, a lot of these issues that you're talking about, they're very real now. I've done interviews with the government about some of the resettlement efforts after Typhoon Morakot, and similar complaints there. A lot of the Aboriginals that were relocated were not happy with the new houses that they got and did not feel consulted. Exactly like you're saying, they didn't feel listened to by the government. And so that question of how much do you change, how much do you respect what's already there, I think that that's still very much a question that is very pertinent today, even. So what sort of experiences or what sorts of lessons do you wish that could be shared with more people that are in the middle of this controversy?
Well, I'll give you an example of the former priest. Before I arrived in Orchid Island, there was a priest from Switzerland named Father Geiger, and he had lived there for about 7 or 8 years, and the people just really, really loved him. And he was not only a friend, but he fought for those people. He fought against the soldiers who let their cows go eat up their taro roots. You know, he really did a lot of good for those people, and he loved them immensely. When he died tragically in a car accident, every house had his picture there. I think it wasn't so much what he said, you know, in his sermons. It was his action in understanding their needs and then fighting for justice for them. And so that's what I would like people to understand when they want to do something good. They have to understand what the people want. You know, what's important to them. To listen to them. To be with them, and they will eventually tell you what they want. And then you can fight for them and don't think that you have all the answers. They have a lot of answers themselves. And I think it's important to listen. And then we call it conscientization when you understand what the other peoples are thinking and then make it a part of yourself and then try and help them to reach their goals.
Now, the events of this book happened all the way back in the early 1970s, but you've actually stuck around in Taiwan for the majority of that time since then. And for most of the time since the 1970s, you've been in an Aboriginal community in eastern Hsinchu, Qingchuan Village. So clearly, I mean, there's something about Taiwan and something about these Aboriginal communities that it draws you and makes you want to stick around. So what has been keeping you here this whole time?
Well, like I said before, it's the people, tribal people, and myself. There seemed to be some kind of electricity there. I really like them, and I'm drawn to them. And it's hard to say why, but to me, I just find them very, very interesting, fascinating, and lovable people. And also, I love nature. And I love the mountains where I am now. I also love the ocean where I was on Orchid Island, and I love the air, the good environment, the cleanness of the mountains, the cleanness of Orchid Island, the purity of the water. All these things appeal to me. I mean, they're not things I have to fight against to stay. You know, they're drawing factors. Taiwan's mountains are beautiful, and Orchid Island has the best. Water, seawater of any place in Taiwan. It's a unique, in all of Southeast Asia, it's unique. So these were things that I feel not only drawn, but so happy and proud to be here. I feel blessed. That's what's kept me here. The nature, the people, the environment.
Mm. And so you've been living so close to these communities for so long in Taiwan, and you've kind of seen the trajectory that they're on. Is that trajectory a positive one from your view? Do you feel like the way that these communities are developing and their place in Taiwan and their relationship with the rest of Taiwan as a country and as a community, do you feel like that's going in the right direction?
Well, actually, I do. I didn't feel so much so when I first came to Taiwan. There was a feeling towards Aborigines at that time called assimilation. The government wanted to assimilate them. Everybody should speak the same language, or Mandarin. Basically, it was taught in the schools. Everybody should be more or less Chinese. And they tried to kind of force this on a lot of the tribal communities. And now that that thinking has changed. And so there's a lot of indigenous pride that's come in the last years. People are proud to be, you know, Aborigine. If I asked 30 years ago, if I asked somebody in our village, do you know what tribe you belong to? A lot of them would have just said, I don't know, I'm a mountain man. Mm. That was the term they used for mountain people. Mm-hmm. They weren't even conscious of, many were, didn't even know what their tribe was.
So there's almost been a re-education.
Yeah, and in the last 20, 30 years, schools are teaching indigenous languages now. You know, look, we have an indigenous television station. We have, Aborigine Council of Affairs. We have all kinds of things now for that we didn't have before. And I think this is wonderful for the, you could see it in the people, the young people in the past were very, especially in the mountain areas, were very kind of humble, too humble. You know, there was always this I'm ashamed type of thing in them. Now you don't, and the young people, you don't see that. Mm. You don't see it at all. It's a different kind of person coming now. And I think that's good. And for as far as the Orchid Island people, I think they have also, my gosh, some of them are writers. They've made, you know, they're authors. They've put out books about their own traditions and stories and culture. Many of them are working in Taiwan and in media and in all different kinds in fields. And then they go back and bring to their island. Their island has a radio station, so it's a great improvement. I think. I think it's going in the right direction. They have to adapt. Mm. And even tourism, I think, is good as mm-hmm. long as it helps the people, mm-hmm. you know. And I think it's doing that, at least in our village, it certainly is. Tourism is kind of crucial for now for the livelihood of the people.
And real quick, before we wrap things up, so you're re-releasing this book. This is a book that has already been released in English, and before that, way before that, it was released in Chinese. It was mm-hmm. the Chinese version was very popular, very successful. Mm-hmm. And you're releasing this as an e-book through Camphor Press. So can just to wrap things up, tell us a little bit about how that came about and what you see as the significance of getting this into kind of the internet age at this particular mm-hmm. point in time. Why do you think that this is an important time for you to get this out as an ebook?
Well, first of all, I wrote it in English, but it wasn't published for many years. It was published in Chinese mm-hmm. first. It was translated by a famous writer called San Mao. Mm. And it was only years later that I wanted to see my own English in print. Mm. And so I did my self-published version. I put a lot of time into it and tried to make it as beautiful as possible, but not too many people were able to see it. You know, when you publish your own book, you have to distribute it and you don't have those outlets. So when this opportunity came along for Camphor Press to do an ebook, I was really happy because I thought, well, you know, this now anybody in the world can get it if they want. It'll go on to Amazon, it'll go on to different outlets, and people can have an opportunity to see this and it'll kind of have a rebirth. Mm. So I'm very excited about that. And I think that's important because a lot of people today go to ebooks. They have a digital way of reading. And I personally have always liked, you know, pages to turn.
Times are changing.
But now I'm getting to see, well, you know, you can always bring your iPad along with mm-hmm. you and have a whole bunch of books to read. So it's a great thing. And I hope, it's successful, and I'm very grateful to Camphor Press for republishing this.
All right. Well, the book is Song of Orchid Island. It's coming out through Camphor Press, and we have been speaking to its author, Father Barry Martinson. Father Martinson, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Oh, thank you.
You can learn more about the book at camphorpress.com. And if you haven't visited their website already, you're really going to want to. You know, anybody who's listening to Taiwan Talk obviously is interested in Taiwan. Well, Camphor Press is just a great resource for learning about Taiwan. It's got a ton of nonfiction books filling in many of the gaps on writing about Taiwan history, culture, and many other areas that it's hard to find anywhere else. So definitely worth checking out. They are not even paying me to say that. I'm just a big fan of what they're doing. To plug my own stuff, meanwhile, you can, of course, listen to New Taiwan Talk interviews every Monday on air at the 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. newscast on ICRT FM 100. Those on-air versions are somewhat abbreviated for the complete interviews, such as the one you just heard. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or follow me on Twitter. At Keith Benconi is where I tweet from. I'm going to be shooting up a link every time a new show is available, so you can find it there. That is it for the show today. We may be taking a break next week for the Lunar New Year. Not really sure yet. So maybe see you in a week or maybe see you in two. Either way, for Taiwan Talk, I'm Keith Benconi.